Welcome. You're listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. I'm Ron Fraser, talking today with Joel Smith. Joel is going to present to us a brief discussion of the popular book and movie, The Da Vinci Code, and then we're going to talk about some of the underlying history that's behind the book and some interesting ideas of how that history relates to the Baha'i faith. Joel, why don't you tell us a little bit about your impression of the book?
Well, good morning, Ron. The Da Vinci Code is obviously a very popular best-selling book that's been made into a movie that's also very successful. And it's somewhat controversial, and in fact it even has some groups protesting it, and even some groups within the Catholic Church are suggesting that people ban it or not even go see it. It's a murder mystery, as you may know, and it one of the themes that attracted my attention was the idea that the Jesus family line survived him, that the family did not cease to exist when he died. And in the book, the premise is presented that Mary Magdalene was actually his wife, and that she was pregnant when he was killed, and that she, upon his death, fled Israel and moved to France, where supposedly her daughter, who was born, intermarried with people who later became the royal bloodline or the royal family of France. In the book, what attracted me was there's quite an extensive examination of the idea of the Holy Grail. And in the book, it talks about, in French, the word Holy Grail is Saint Graal. San Grial, Holy Grail, Holy Cup. And in the book, it presents the idea that if you divide the word slightly differently, San Grial becomes Sang Real, which is royal bloodline. In the book, the premise is presented that Mary Magdalene was actually the Holy Grail, that she was the royal bloodline, and that through her, Jesus' bloodline continued into the modern era. And this is what people are protesting, and this is what people are getting upset about. There actually is no evidence that Jesus and Mary were married and that they ever had children.
Yeah, this is going to be my question. Is there any, there is no history here?
There is no evidence of this. And in fact, in the Baha'i writings, it says that Jesus was not married. However, this does not mean that the royal bloodline ceased to exist. And that's what I would like to talk about today with you.
Okay.
Now, as you may know, Jesus had brothers and sisters, so he was not the only one in his family. And if you look at Matthew 13, verses 55 and 56, we see that some residents of Nazareth asked, quote, "Is this not the carpenter's son?" So Jesus was actually the son of a carpenter. "Is not his mother called Mary? And his brothers, James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. And his sisters, are they not all with us?" Unquote. So this is all in Matthew 13. So Jesus apparently had four brothers and at least two sisters. It doesn't name the sisters. It doesn't even tell us how many there were. During Jesus' life, there's no evidence that his brothers believed in him as a Savior or Messiah. Yet, later on, James became a prominent believer, and James was probably the first bishop of Jerusalem. And James probably wrote the New Testament book of James. And there is speculation that that Judas, his other brother, wrote the book of Jude. So Jesus did have brothers and sisters. And historians have determined that there were actually three well-known and authentic lines of legitimate blood descendants from Jesus' own family. One was through Joaquin and Anna, who were Jesus' maternal grandparents. A second was from Elizabeth, the first cousin of Jesus' mother, Mary, and Elizabeth's husband, Zachary. And the third bloodline was from Cleophas and his wife, who was also a first cousin of Mary. And in
so these are documented, but
yes,
there must have been others from these others, brothers and sisters.
Well, these are the documented three lines that survived Jesus, the three bloodlines.
So there's probably others, but they're not documented.
Well, there's no evidence that there were others. So
yeah,
these are the
right.
ones that we know existed. In fact, there's evidence that after the death of James, the brother of Jesus, that Simon, the son of Cleophas, became the next bishop of Jerusalem. So what's interesting is that this family line, the family line of Jesus that survived his death, survived at least until the 3rd century. And as you know, in the 3rd century, after years and years and years of persecution and harassment and even wholesale killings of the Christian community, all of a sudden the Catholic Church, or the Church in Rome, received the endorsement or the support of the Caesar, of Constantine. And in fact, it's an interesting story that the first pope that Constantine came to was Miltiades, and Miltiades refused Constantine's request to become a Christian. He said that, in his opinion, Pope Miltiades said that, in his opinion, the return of Jesus could be at any moment, and that the church had to remain pure, and we didn't need the likes of Constantine. Shortly thereafter, Miltiades died. We don't know the circumstances, but his successor, who was Pope Sylvester, was the first to accept the endorsement of Constantine. Well, what's interesting and how this relates to the bloodline of Jesus, and this is written in a book that was written by a Catholic priest and a Jesuit scholar, Malachi Martin, in a book titled The Decline and Fall of the Roman Church. Martin records that descendants of Jesus came to Pope Sylvester, and they said that they were the original church, that in the history of the church, when the Romans surrounded Jerusalem, and then when they destroyed Jerusalem in AD 70, it says that the original church escaped to the east. And these people who met with Pope Sylvester in the 3rd century claimed to be that church, because later on they came back to Jerusalem. And they said that they had an unbroken chain of succession of descendants of Jesus' family line as leaders of their church for 300 years. So these descendants of Jesus came to Rome, and they met with the Pope, and they asked him, they told him that it's very interesting that you have now received the backing of the emperor and of the Roman Empire, but we are the original church. In fact, there is a time when the Roman community actually sent the believers in Jerusalem money. And so these third century descendants of Jesus asked Pope Sylvester to endorse them, to recognize them as the true church, to revoke the Roman bishops, and to acknowledge the bishops who had been appointed by the Jerusalem church. Hmm. Now, these third century descendants of Jesus were called the Despos Sinoi, literally the family of the despot, the family members of the Lord. And Pope Sylvester's response to them was, it may have been that you had a claim to the leadership of the church at one point, but now the leadership is in Rome, and that's the way it's going to stay. So he essentially sent them back to Israel and sent them back to Jerusalem empty-handed and did not recognize any of their claims. And in fact, later on, it says that when they persisted in their claims, that the Romans actually sent legions out after them and hunted them down. What's interesting is this bloodline, this family line, there's no evidence that it ever ceased to exist. There is some evidence that perhaps in the 6th century, with the rise of Muhammad as a prophet, and this group of people having an understanding of the succession of the prophets, recognized Muhammad as a prophet, and that much of the original family line of Jesus may have been absorbed into infant Islam.
So there isn't any record of the family after the 6th century?
There's really not much of a record after the 3rd century of the immediate family members of Jesus. However, the sang real, the royal bloodline, did survive, and it existed at least until the 1800s. And to students of the Baha'i faith and people who are interested in Baha'u'llah would be interested to know that he is of the bloodline. He is of the royal bloodline, that he was royalty. And without going into much detail, his family line can be traced back to the kings of ancient Persia. And as you may know, even in the Bible stories, the story of Esther, when the Jewish people were taken as captives into Assyria, and then the Assyrians were conquered by the Babylonians, and the Babylonians were conquered by the Persians. The story of Esther is the story of this biblical woman marrying the Persian king. This is only one example. There are other examples of the Persian kings intermarrying with the descendants, with the Hebrew descendants, with the Hebrew royal line. Of particular interest to Baha'is is the Arab historian's description of the mother of one of these Persian kings. At-Tabari, the Arab historian, wrote, quote, "The mother of Bahman's sons was the slave Rahab bint Pinchas of the children of Rehoboam, Solomon, and David. Bahman appointed Rahab's brother Zerubbabel king over the Israelites and returned him to Palestine upon Rahab's request." So we do know from the histories of Baha'u'llah's family that he was related to the Persian kings, and that his line goes back to the Sasanian dynasty. And here it is saying that the mother of Sasan, the one who is the one that the family line goes back to Sasan, married Rahab, the sister of Zerubbabel. What's interesting is if you look at the genealogies of Jesus in the New Testament, you will find the name Zerubbabel. It was a practice of the Persian Empire. Many of the empires back then, when they would conquer another country, would sweep in and destroy everything and sack and pillage and take goods and money and slaves back to their own land. The Persians did not do this. The Persians would conquer a country, set up their own administrative system, let the country survive, let them continue to function and to let their economy survive, and then to tax them. So as such, it was a way for them to have a steady income. Well, the descendants the Persian king sent Zerubbabel back to Israel to rebuild the gates and the walls of Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. So interesting sidelight here is that it was actually the Persian kings who financed the rebuilding of Jerusalem and the building of the temple in Jerusalem. But the person, the governor that they sent back to govern Judah and Israel at this time is Zerubbabel. And he shows up in Jesus' genealogy. And according to the Arab historian, who is not a Baha'i, he also is the, Zerubbabel is also the descendant of Baha'u'llah.
Descendant, you mean the ancestor?
The ancestor, yes. So what's interesting here in relating this back to the Da Vinci Code is the idea of the royal bloodline of King David. As you know, there's a covenant established with Abraham that through his family the world would be blessed. And of this family line arose the kings of ancient Israel, among them King David and King Solomon. Well, according to the genealogies of Jesus, you can trace his line back to David and Solomon, and according to the genealogies of Baha'u'llah, you can trace him also back to David and Solomon. So relating this back to the Da Vinci Code, Baha'u'llah is actually of the royal bloodline. And I think the Da Vinci Code misses the boat just a little bit and the fact that there is no evidence to support what is presented in the Da Vinci Code book, and the fact that Jesus had immediate family members who survived, but the family line, the royal family line of the of that line did survive into the 1800s, and in the 1800s, a prophet of God appeared, and his name is Baha'u'llah. One of the interesting things about the legends of the Holy Grail or of the royal bloodline is that whoever possesses the Holy Grail will have prosperity. So in that sense, Baha'u'llah is the Holy Grail. Baha'u'llah is the Sangreal, the royal bloodline. And by association, whoever possesses him will also have prosperity.
It's a nice thought.
Well, what's interesting is we've pretty much established that Baha'u'llah is of the royal bloodline, and that's an interesting little factoid or little tidbit. But the question I guess you could ask is Baha'u'llah truly a prophet? Is there anything to substantiate this claim? And as you may know, I have written a webpage, the Baha'i Prophecy Fulfilled webpage. And I'm going to give a little commercial here. If you go to bci.org/prophecy-fulfilled, all one word, you can research much of these things, that the genealogy of Baha'u'llah is on the webpage, and the proofs from the prophecies are on the webpage. The proofs from the 24th chapter of Matthew and the book of Revelation and the book of Isaiah, which all explicitly foretell the coming of Baha'u'llah.
I'll put that web page link in the text information that will be attached to the sound file of this podcast, so you can check the text.
I think one of the part of the Da Vinci Code story deals with anagrams and hidden number codes and cryptex and all these interesting little ideas. And I think that there are actually mysteries in the Bible that the real mysteries are in the Bible, that the Bible contains many numbers and many codes that when you decipher what they mean, just given an astonishing meaning. One of the paintings of Da Vinci, Leonardo da Vinci, is the Mona Lisa, and people always wonder, what is she smiling about? And Da Vinci apparently claimed to have knowledge that other people didn't have. And one of the knowledges I think that he had was the idea, the understanding of Jesus' relationship to God. It's important to understand Jesus' relationship to God and the idea of the return of this relationship, or the return of Jesus to humanity. And if you look at the actual words of Jesus himself, in the Gospel of John, in the 8th chapter and 12th chapter and 14th chapter, Jesus said, I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. In the 12th chapter, Jesus says, I speak therefore even as the Father said unto me, so I speak. In the 14th chapter, he says, the words that I speak unto you, I speak not of myself, but the Father that dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. In the 14th chapter, verse 31, he says, I love the Father, and as the Father gave me commandment, even so I do. And in John 14:28, Jesus says, my Father is greater than I. So Jesus clearly establishes his relationship to God as one who speaks the words of God and one who does whatever God tells him to do. There are three key words in the New Testament that, when you understand what they mean, shed insight into the idea of the return of Christ. One is the word Christ, and as you may know, the word Christ means the anointed. The other is the word Logos, and the word Logos is translated as word. In the beginning was the word. It's actually the spoken word. And the other is parousia, which is the presence. And in the 24th chapter of Matthew, Jesus is sitting there, and his disciples ask him, when will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world? Well, this has two key mistranslations. In the original Greek, what it says is, when will be the return of the parousia, the return of the presence, and then the end of the the aeon, the end of the age, or the end of the dispensation. So this is one of the mysteries. This is one of the hidden understandings that people apparently have kind of missed throughout the centuries, is that Jesus spoke the words of God, and that when he promised to return, what was actually being promised is the return of the voice, the return of the presence, the return of the anointing. And this is what Baha'u'llah claims, is that the same voice that spoke through Jesus also spoke through him. In fact, in another place, Baha'u'llah said, "I am the one whom the tongue of Isaiah hath extolled." Baha'u'llah claims to be the one who's foretold in the book of Isaiah. In the same passage, he says, "I am the one who the tongue of Isaiah hath extolled." In the same passage, he says, "I am the one with whose name both the Torah and the Evangel were adorned." That he claims to be the one whose coming was foretold in Isaiah, in the Old Testament, and in the New Testament. And this is something that time here doesn't really allow us to go into much detail on this, but one of the key, one of the cardinal Baha'i teachings, one of the Baha'i tenets, is independent investigation of truth. So all these things are on my webpage. All these things are in other books. We encourage you, we invite you to investigate and to learn more, because if it is true that Baha'u'llah is a prophet of God who appeared in the middle of the 1800s and gave us teachings for humanity, then this actually is the Holy Grail that will bring prosperity to humanity, and that those who possess it will have better lives.
Thank you. Well, some of those things that you were just talking about are in our earlier podcast, too. If you look at the whole list of the podcast, you'll see Joel Smith pop up in, about the third or fourth through the 12th podcast. We had a 9-part series of Joel's explanation of biblical prophecy and interpretation. And there was a couple other podcasts, the titles of which don't come to mind right now, that talked about the idea of Baha'u'llah being the return of Christ. Okay, well, we're gonna close this off. Joel, can you just summarize this discussion a little bit?
Well, we started out with a discussion of the Da Vinci Code book and movie, and it brings up some themes and some ideas that are interesting. Some of them are not particularly verifiable. The idea of the bloodline. The bloodline did survive. There is a bloodline that goes back to Abraham, that goes back to King David, to King Solomon, to the Persian kings. The bloodline survived at least until the middle of the 1800s with the appearance of Baha'u'llah. It is possible to verify that Baha'u'llah is of the bloodline. It is possible to verify that Baha'u'llah actually was a prophet of God. He did claim to be the one foretold by Isaiah. He did claim to be the one foretold in the Jewish prophecies and the Jewish scriptures and the Christian scriptures. If this is true, it is far more important than a novel or a movie. This is something that will have an impact on the well-being and happiness of humanity for at least the next 1,000 years. There are things going on in the world. There are things happening in the Middle East and all over the world that people are wondering, how can we ever solve these problems? How can we ever solve these questions? Well, if you look at the teachings of Baha'u'llah, you will find that he offers us solutions on ways to bring peace to the Middle East, to bring peace to the world, to bring peace to humanity. He fulfills the Islamic prophecies, he fulfills the Jewish prophecies, he fulfills the Christian prophecies, and in such, in his being, there is a way to rise above the traditional religious hatreds and cultural hatreds that have existed for centuries. All Baha'is ask you to do is to investigate, to know about it, to gaze with an open and unbiased mind on the signs of his revelation, of his proofs, of what he has to say, and decide for yourself whether you think that this might be something that you might like to have in your life.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, Thanks to Joel Smith, and thanks to you for listening. And remember, you're welcome to join us at any time. You've been listening to the podcast of the Baha'is of Florida's Emerald Coast. If you'd like to learn more about the Baha'i faith, look on the internet. The international site is baha'i.org. You'll find information about the faith, and there's also links to the Baha'i communities in several dozen countries around the world. Or, in the U.S., go to baha'i.us. Remember that Baha'i is B-A-H-A-I. In Florida, our website is Emerald Coast Baha'is, that's with an S at the end, .org. EmeraldCoastBaha'is.org. Our phone numbers to talk to a human, call 1-800-22-UNITE, or in Florida, call 850-543-2129. To leave us a voicemail, toll-free, call 866-590-4545. And please let us know if we can use your message on the air in one of our podcasts. You can also email us at panhandlebaha'is@aol.com. Thanks for listening.